Welcome to the Healing Ground Movement, a podcast dedicated to revolutionizing how we think about our bodies and our health. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, DC, and I have lived my life in pursuit of holistic healing and care that goes beyond symptom management. If you've been listening and like what you're hearing, head over to your favorite platform and leave us a review so we can reach more people with our important message. Enjoy today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Hudson. Thank you for joining us today. And today we are going to take a slow, mindful walk into the world of meditation. Joining us, we have Michelle Maddox. Michelle is a certified mindfulness and meditation instructor and the owner of Sedona Meditation Experiences in Sedona, Arizona. She takes people out and onto the iconic Red Rocks for the meditation experience of a lifetime. Michelle offers meditation retreats and experiences for newbies and seasoned meditators alike. And today, Michelle is going to join us to talk a little bit about, you know, we've heard so much about meditation, we've heard so much about mindfulness, and it's time for a really practical conversation about what to do and what to expect. So Michelle, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Carly. I'm pleased to be here.
Wonderful. And for those of us that can see on our little YouTube snippet, you just have the most beautiful background of Sedona behind you. It just looks like you have a gorgeous day out there.
It is fantastic. We're really blessed this spring. Usually it gets blazing hot very quick. There's no spring at all. But this year we've been able to gradually step it up.
Wonderful. Well, Michelle, before we start talking about meditation specifically, can you tell us a little bit about what brought you to this particular niche in your life and particularly the outdoor elements that you so beautifully incorporate?
Sure. Yeah, it's been a flow of different elements of my life coming together beautifully. And for me, meditation started very young. I was lucky. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, it's not so uncommon for kids to be exposed to meditation in school or elsewhere. But I grew up in the 80s in Indiana. I went to a Catholic school. You know, these are not places where you would typically expect to encounter meditation. And yet I did. At my high school, my freshman year, there was a meditation workshop. And it was held by an Indian gentleman who lived in the community who simply wanted to teach kids what he knew about meditation. And I was interested in it because about a year before that happened, John Lennon from Beatles fame was murdered. And suddenly the Beatles were in the news everywhere. And my little 12-year-old mind just went berserk with the Beatles. I don't know why, but I started reading books and listening to other music and just became and still am a big Beatles nerd. And part of the Beatles story, of course, is going to India. They learned to meditate with the Maharishi. And the stories would just fill my mind with, what's that? All these, you know, psychedelic pictures and just that whole period of time was so intriguing to me. So when this meditation workshop presented itself at my high school, I'm thinking, I want to be like the Beatles. So I signed up for this workshop. It was me and literally one other student, not very popular at the time. But it put me on this path of meditation. It taught me some really basic things about how simple and natural meditation is. And I learned a technique that I got a lot of mileage out of, you know, it's through stressful times in high school and then college. And of course, as I went to university and got out into the world, I started, learning a little bit more as opportunities would cross my path. But it wasn't until I came to Sedona, which was in 1997, I was on a healing journey and, came here by chance and things just fell into place. I had a really amazing healing experience, loved the nature, and just naturally wanted to sit out and meditate. I don't know what happened. It just all came together in a really beautiful way.
Where it goes. Well, and I love all the little pieces of your journey really start to touch on some things that I think are really common misconceptions about meditation, beginning with the idea that there is perhaps only one type of meditation and that one type, depending on your previous exposure, is either very austere and strict and unmoving,
or has a little bit of that psychedelic haze to it, you know, the residue of the 1970s. But none of those things really hold up to be true in that there's one true way to meditate. Am I right?
You're absolutely right. And it's so important. Yeah, there are, you know, you can go take a class in meditation that will teach you a specific technique, kind of indoctrinate you into all the history and, you know, that this is the way you meditate. And a lot of people think that that's the only way to meditate. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, there's so many ways to meditate, not just the technique you're using, but how you sit, where you sit, how long you meditate. There's lots and lots of variables, and there's not a one size fits all.
Absolutely. So what, let's start kind of talking about what some of those variables are that people might not expect, kind of even beginning with the how long and where of it all.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Beatles, you know, they had studied transcendental meditation, mm-hmm. which is a popular technique that's still out there. And I know in that world, they teach twice a day for 20 minutes. And, you know, that was a good rule of thumb for me, even when I went through my meditation teacher training. But what I've learned since is that's a lot. To go from zero to that is huge for people. Mm-hmm. It's an unrealistic expectation for them. So the amount of time you meditate, you know, I say start slowly. And this is where a technique called mindfulness can be really useful. Mindfulness is like a snack, where meditation is a nice long meal. Sometimes you don't have time for that meal. And instead of going hungry, you know, you can just have a snack. But mindfulness is a way to, you know, practice that inner awareness that meditation is so good at, you know, taking you into. So, you know, you can meditate like that for a minute or even less. It can just be a mindful breath. Mm-hmm. And of course, if you really want to dive into meditation, you can make it as long as you want, but longer does not always mean better. So that's one of the important variables. People think that, wow, you know, I don't have 20 minutes to put into my busy day. It's okay. You don't need it. You can meditate for a couple of minutes.
I love that. And just, I've never heard of mindfulness as a snack. That comparison to meditation as the meal and mindfulness as a snack is so beautiful. I will be taking that one with me. But I think that's a really great thing to point out, because mindfulness is one of those words that has become part of popular jargon in this sort of self-help, self-care movement that does tend to get watered down, and without really bringing attention to what mindfulness is and how it can be used productively, it's sort of a nice passing thought, which ironically is not mindfulness at all. But it's that turning inward and having attention, which is the seed of meditation itself.
Exactly.
That's beautiful.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, you know, it's like an inner muscle. And you, like any muscle, we have to exercise it before, you know, we get really strong, and it's there for us when we need it. And mindfulness is just a little moment of exercising that inner muscle.
I love it. So what about, so we talked about the length of time and that more is not always better. And what makes the idea of sitting for a long period of time, particularly if you're new to meditation and you haven't been flexing that muscle and practicing and strengthening that muscle, what makes the more of it all not necessarily a good thing?
You know, I wouldn't make a blanket statement. Some people can, you know, dive right into meditation and they're just natural swimmers. You know, they just take to it and they can, do a nice long meditation. And some people need to wade into the water a little more slowly. More, of course, I think it's personally the way I think of a longer meditation. I did a lot of international travel when I was younger, before I got busy with career, and I could stay for a while. And I found that going into a foreign country, there was always like a week or two of getting sick and just struggling with all the foreignness before I could just let go and really be there and enjoy it. And that's how I think of longer meditations. Sometimes it takes a while for the mind and the body and the nervous system to really settle down. And once it does, I like to stay there for a while mm-hmm. before I come out of it. So longer can be like that. I think it's more of a kind of a mind trick when you think of a long meditation. It's like, oh my gosh, I could never sit there for 20 minutes and do that. Mm-hmm. But when you're in that space, it's a very different experience. You know, when you're just going with that flow, it can be beautiful. So, you know, everybody's different. Some people need to build up to it. Some people can just dive right in.
Love it. Well, and that brings up another misconception or different ways of meditating that I think is worth discussing. And that's that idea that I think so much of us have heard that meditation is just about clearing your mind, having a blank mind. And really, when it comes down to it, sitting down with the expectation that I'm going to sit and breathe and go silent, it's a bit of a setup. Can you talk a little bit about that expectation around meditation?
Yeah, it's totally a setup. And it's also like this really bizarre notion that the world's divided into people who can magically clear their thoughts and therefore are meditators and the rest of us who have no clue how to do that. So a huge misperception there, right? There is no magic way to clear your mind of thoughts. It just doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. If there were such a button to push, we would have worn it out by now to clear our mind of thoughts. So the fact that you have a busy mind is not an indication that you're not somebody who can meditate. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's kind of the opposite. It's when you notice that busyness, you know, where your mind's just racing and going all over the place. It's a good moment to say, wow, you know, meditation would be kind of nice for me right now to help bring some order in here. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that meditation teaches is how to stay focused. It's a tool that serves you in meditation, you know, because mm-hmm. your mind is going off every which way. And it's paradoxical in meditation that we're trying to find this peace when we've got this chaos in mm-hmm. our mind. But we do that by bringing the mind back to some focus. And the mind's going to wander. You mm-hmm. bring it back. And every time you do this, you're reinforcing this ability to focus your attention. It does get easier. And it's not easier because the busyness just magically goes away. It's the nature of the mind to think, and mm-hmm. it's not going to change. Even when you're a seasoned meditator, you know, we have this world that keeps us here often. The easier part is that it's easier for you to bring your focus back as you literally burn those neural pathways into your brain that teach you to stay focused in meditation as well as out in the world. So there's no way to clear your thoughts, but you can manage them. And that's what meditation helps us with.
Oh man, we would wear out that button. Just like, make it away, make it away. And I like to think of it, it's kind of since I've been having these conversations with the podcast that it's been made even clearer and clearer that it's a learned behavior as much as anything else. So in the sense that some of us would say, oh, I'm not capable of meditating or finding mindfulness or doing that. It's almost a saying, I'm not capable of learning a new way to focus. I'm not capable of learning a new internal behavior. Where we have learned and practiced so efficiently, so well, we are so practiced at responding to the beeps and buzzes on our phone. We are so practiced to react to the little red notification signal on whatever app is on our device. We can condition ourselves to do anything, but it takes effort and it takes repetition, and meditation is no different, which is sort of a welcoming thought to me that if I can learn to be chaotic, then I can also learn to be calm. I just have to put as much practice into it. And that means I have to make that time for myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things that I first sort of trained myself when I became a meditator, I noticed, you know, where my body holds tension. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was noticing that my tongue was always pushing against the back of my teeth or the roof mm-hmm. of my mouth, and my jaw would be clenched. And I consciously started training myself to become aware of that and to relax it. And now I don't have that problem. So, you know, there's still other parts of my body where I do tend to carry my tension. Mm-hmm. And it's a lifelong process, but it's just one of many examples where putting your attention, causes behavior changes. Yeah. You know, energy goes where your attention is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you focus on peace, when you make that a priority, it's like the universe is going to rearrange itself to help you accomplish that.
Oh, beautiful. Well, and I think that's a great lead into another expectation that comes from meditation, which is that it is a panacea, that it will fix everything. And it can do a lot. But what are some good expectations? Like, what are we really going to put our faith in meditation for?
Yeah, you're right. It can do a lot, but you know, it's not been the panacea. it's a beautiful practice, and it's a slow relaxing of the nervous system. This is one of the superpowers of meditation. Is, you know, our nervous system is almost like a sponge that just soaks up stress. And a lot of us are carrying around a lifetime of stress. Mm-hmm. And if you're not doing anything to manage that stress, you know, your stress level tends to be really, really high. And what meditation does is it slowly starts to lower your baseline stress level. Doesn't mean you won't have stress, but it means you'll come back down to a more calm state. Mm-hmm. And it does that slowly, right? It's like working out at the gym. You don't work out once and, you know, you're not buff. You're not ready to, you know, join the Miss America contest or whatever. But with meditation, your nervous system, every time you meditate, it slowly unravels, slowly starts to work those kinks out. And as that happens, energy is going to move through your body much more freely. And that's good for everything. Mm-hmm. It nourishes your organs. It regulates things like your blood pressure and your sleep patterns. It helps you be more fluid with your emotions. Mm-hmm. And all of these beautiful benefits that you hear about with meditation, many of them are because your nervous system is able to let go of that stress and work the way that it's meant to and help you be a little more graceful and easy in your well-being.
Beautiful. Yeah, I like the sense of that it really does just open up that foundational capacity for your body, for your mind, for your emotional. If you are in that heightened place of never having set down stress, anything will trigger you. Mm-hmm. Versus with letting off that steam and getting down to a foundational level of calm, not only, as you said, are your organs going to be working better because they are not bathed in cortisol, and you'll be sleeping better so that you've had time to rest and recover and rejuvenate. That's what sleep is for. It heals and repairs all of our wear and tear from the day. If we can clean shop better with the use of meditation and the application of that practice, then we have a more resilient body, a more resilient person to take out into the world. And that's where we get to start interacting with everything a little bit more different, a little bit differently, and a little bit more engaged.
Absolutely. And to be more present, mm-hmm. you know, to be there for the moments of your life. Instead of wishing them away, you know, watching the clock go or thinking five moves ahead or worrying about things that may not even ever happen, you can inhabit the moment with grace and ease. So it is a slow process, you know, meditation is a slow thing, but it's usually the people in your life around you who watch your behavior a little closer than you may, who start to recognize changes in you first. You know, maybe they're used to like, if I say this one thing, I'm going to press her button and she's going to react. And maybe that reaction goes away. Mm. You know, when your stress level comes down, you're less reactive to everything. And kind of gives you a pause to think, how do I want to respond to this? Mm-hmm. And so people may not get the same rise out of you. And of course, you know, like you mentioned, sleep, all these things that we need to regenerate and be healthy, they start to slowly come into a better regulation through meditation. So it's not a quick fix, definitely not a panacea, but a really powerful tool in your wellness toolkit.
I think that when it comes to the most powerful tools in our kit, it is the ones that require, that ask for the daily practice, the small dose every day, because we are ever changing. You know, we take ourselves through the day, we go through our wear and tear, and it's things like we need to feed ourselves every day. We need to breathe every day. We need to water ourselves every day. I hope we're watering ourselves every day, and sleep and meditate. But this is the consistent movement forward. It's the crash and burn approach where we're looking for the giant silver bullet versus the small consistent choices that give us 1,000 little wins. And we can see that spread out across our days and our interactions and our relationships.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's, you know, it's like the crash diet where you want to lose 15 pounds in a couple of weeks versus the lifestyle choices that will naturally keep your weight regulated.
Yeah.
Same approach with meditation.
Beautiful, because one of them will keep you consistently in a body type that fits you and your constitution, and the other one will do the yo-yo effect where as soon as you stop doing something that isn't sustainable, you go back to where you were and then worse. And you'll see that in the burnout cycle, and meditation is that consistent release valve.
And I think one of the challenges there is when you are stressed out, when you're coming to a practice like meditation and it's brand new for you, perhaps you're new to wellness in general, you know, and you've got a lot of habits in your life that, you know, have you stressed out and maybe kind of numb to some subtle energy. And it's the things that are out there that are like an electric shock that sometimes get through to you when you're in that state. And we kind of tend to believe that, well, if I can't feel it, then nothing's really happening. And the thing with meditation is it's very subtle. It's very subtle. And, you know, the more you meditate, the more you relax yourself, the more you kind of allow your energy to expand out into those subtler energies all around you. But when you're just starting out, you know, sometimes you've got that crusty shell of stress all around you, and you need to kind of let that, you know, break up a little bit. Just take it on faith, you know, that something's happening. You may not get the electric shock, like, oh yeah, I feel it. It might be very subtle. But once you kind of break through that and are able to, you know, exist in a more expanded state, you'll definitely appreciate the subtlety, the subtle approach of incremental change instead of, you know, shock treatment kind of change.
Exactly. It goes into the category of things that I just, these conversations in my office happen on a daily, weekly basis of my patients implementing lifestyle changes. And whether that's meditation, whether that's good nutrition or supplementation, water, good night's sleep, where magically, somehow, all the problem that was dogging them that wouldn't go away was gone. But it has nothing to do with the lifestyle change. It couldn't. It was too subtle. Until they stop doing that lifestyle change. They feel so good that they stop having good sleep hygiene. They stop taking the supplement. They stop meditating. And suddenly the problem is back. And it takes almost that negative proof positive after the fact to reinforce. Like that's the shock treatment, that the problem came back afterwards, rather than, as you said, almost this leap of faith that this thing went away and it was because of my deliberate action and behavior. Maybe we can spare ourselves that yo-yo lesson.
Yes, that's beautiful. I love that. I love that. And, you know, we often choose to learn the hard way. So however we learn, I guess in the end, it's worth it. But it's the beauty of this day and age. You know, there's people like, you know, meditators and others that have been there, and they're sharing their lessons so other people don't have to struggle through that yo-yo effect.
It's true. Yeah. But we all need to learn the lesson in our own way. And I say, as long as the lesson is learned, I got no complaints.
You know, it reminds me something you said, when I was in college, I was a math major as an undergrad. And it's not because I'm a big math whiz. I like math and, you know, chose to study math. And I'd take these math classes that would be hard, you know, and I'm going to class, I'm keeping up with my assignments, and I'm just struggling to, you know, get through everything. And it wouldn't be until like that class ended, that semester's over, I'd be about third of the way into the next semester when the light would come on and I would suddenly understand what that previous class was really all about. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of taking things on faith. You know, sometimes you just have to trust that something's happening, mm-hmm. even though it feels like all you're doing is barely staying afloat. And then at some point, you know, that light bulb will go on and you'll see, oh, okay, this makes sense now. I get it.
Yeah, I understood it all along. It's the ruby slippers. You had the power all along.
That's right.
Fantastic. So the one more misconception I can think of, and then I'm curious for any that we might have missed, and that is I'm a wiggler and I don't know if I can just sit still for meditation. I have to sit still like on a pillow, right? For meditation?
Absolutely.
Dumb.
No, you said it earlier that, you know, there are some branches of meditation that go back, lineages that go way back, that do have some pretty austere ways of holding the body and, you know, kind of rules, meditation rules. But, you know, good for them. That's not how it has to be. As we've learned in this day and age, you know, we've taken meditation out of some of these contexts of different religious lineages and different practices, and we're bringing it into our culture and leaving kind of some of the mindset with the parent culture. And we're finding that this technique of meditation works, you know, in our culture. And it doesn't matter if you're sitting, you know, on a cushion cross-legged with your spine straight, or if you're in a chair or even slouched over in your bed, you know, it works. The trick is to make it your own. Mm-hmm. So if you like sitting cross-legged on a cushion, that's great. Go for it. Most of us are not comfortable that way. And you certainly may be for a minute, but 5 minutes into your meditation, maybe a different story as your feet fall asleep and your hips go numb. In which case, it's okay to reposition yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, don't torture yourself. Just find a comfortable spot and slowly through experimenting, hopefully you'll find the way to hold your body. You know, sitting cross-legged, kneeling. You know, there are kneeling benches. That's actually what I use. Mm-hmm. Chairs, whatever. It doesn't matter. You know, mm-hmm. the point is to be comfortable so that you can get into that deep state of relaxation. Huge misperception. Yeah, you do not have to be in lotus position to meditate.
And some of it comes too with the idea that, you know, sometimes sitting in mild discomfort, like I have an itch on my nose and I am not going to attend to it immediately. I'm going to witness my desire to fix a thing that is not going to hurt me if I don't fix it. You know, there's an interesting reflection that can come with that. But versus I have screaming pain in my hip because I never should have sat this way in the first place, that's not productive. That's not a productive witnessing and mindful behavior. That is destructive, which
right.
is the whole thing we're trying to get away from.
It's a fine balance. Mm-hmm. It really is, you know, between comfort and fidgeting. A lot of us fidget, you know, like, yeah. Oh, I got this itch, or, you know, constantly having to touch my legs or reposition myself. When you're fidgeting like that, you know, you want to try to settle down in meditation. Mm-hmm. That's part of what's going on, is you want to settle your whole body and nervous system. And when you're constantly moving, you're stirring things up just a little bit each time. And that's a different thing than when you're, like you said, you know, in excruciating pain or something's going numb. You know, don't torture yourself. One of the essential things of meditation is to be kind to yourself. And part of that is, you know, responding when there's pain, you know, do something so you're not in pain.
Beautiful. And then what about branches of meditation that don't require sitting at all? Walking and mindful movements. Is there a place for that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's, you know, mindfulness is a broader kind of catch-all for a lot of activities. Meditation is a word that we use across a pretty wide spectrum. Like it can mean a lot of different things. Personally, I like to think of meditation as a more formal, seated practice where you can really just sink into that quiet space where you almost feel like you're in a dreamlike state. And I think the only way to really get there is to sit still and just, you know, get into it. Mm-hmm. But having said that, walking meditations or mindful eating, you can add mindful to almost anything that you do and really turn it into a meditation-like practice. Mm-hmm. So some people, you know, yoga is a good example. You know, yoga can be seen as moving meditation where you're very mindfully, you know, stretching into different poses and exploring how it feels to open up those muscles and let the circulation move through your body. Not everybody does yoga that way, but you certainly can practice it like that, as you can walking in a labyrinth, walking through a forest. You know, there's something now called forest bathing, mm-hmm. where you mindfully walk through the forest. Eating can be a very mindful activity. Even washing dishes and folding your laundry can be mindful activities.
I love it. And that sort of opens up this window to ways that we can experiment to find what works for us individually. If you are so well practiced at being highly fidgety, highly moving, we know those person that those people that they sit down and their legs still going to be shaking the whole time they're seated. It might be a big ask to dive into a seated meditation. But if maybe we can find that we focus that movement into a very purposeful, deliberate action, that might be the gateway of experimentation into a meditation practice, mm-hmm. or, you know, different avenues to start. So how would one begin to know themselves to experiment with meditation as a practice?
Oh, that's such a good question. You know, usually our intuition speaks to us a little bit. So we've got some inclination. You know, people may think, oh, I could never sit still and meditate like that, but I could maybe do some hand movements or maybe some chanting or something that's a little more fidgety, you know, something that's a little more do instead of just be. So if you automatically kind of have that sense of yourself, you know, just explore there, start there, let that be your guide. But I'm a huge proponent of just trying things out, you know, just give it a try and see what it feels like. And I mentioned this hand thing. There's a beautiful practice where, you know, these different hand positions that you maybe see people do in meditation, they're called mudras. And there's a universe of them. You can study mudras as deeply as you want. But there's some benefit to this touch. And there's a nice little practice, you know, that just goes through where you're cycling through, touching your thumb to each of your fingers, mm-hmm. and you can say a little something. I've heard it many different ways. It can be sata nama, and you just keep going back and forth and saying something like that. It's great for people who are fidgety or anxious and mm-hmm. just want something tactile and repetitive to kind of calm the mind. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's lots of things like that that may seem like, oh, I don't know, that's weird. But who cares if you're by yourself? Nobody's going to judge you. You can just be as weird as you need to be. And you may find a lot of value from it.
And I like that idea a lot, that fidgeting of the touching the fingers. And it takes, again, this fine line, this gray area of fidgeting to pain to doing something deliberate. And that's the practice that we're trying to hone somewhere on the spectrum of mindfulness to meditation to, you know, that deep transcendental space of, you know, all knowing. Maybe that's our goal. But moving from the type of fidgety person that is constantly shaking their leg and a mindless fidgeting to a mindful fidgeting of touching thumb to finger deliberately and adding a deliberate sound to it, that is a step, that is a win. And when we talk, when you talk so much, Michelle, about it being subtle, about being a slow process, we should invite ourselves, I think, to take each of those accomplishments, even in its small progression, as a big win, because we are moving towards another way of being. So mindful fidgeting versus mindless fidgeting can turn into mindful action, can turn into. It builds on itself.
That's really beautiful. Yeah, I love that.
Wonderful. So what are some expectations that we can then have for meditation? I know we've sort of dribbled those in throughout this whole conversation. I just want to make sure if there's any big ones that we didn't touch on that they don't get missed.
Yeah, I mean, expectations opens a whole different kind of door in meditation. And it's another one of the foundational truths is to try to let go of expectations.
Ironic.
And expectations, I mean, I know if you've ever had a really good meditation, it's really natural. The next time you sit down to meditate, you're like, okay, I'm ready for that again. And it just doesn't work that way. You know, it's not a menu where you get to order what you want your experience to look like.
It's almost and a I tell promise people, that you won't have it.
Exactly. You know, it's like everything in life. When you're holding on to an expectation, it's almost like you're pushing it away. Mm. And the trick is to just let go of the expectations and just let it come to you and be okay with whatever it's going to look like. I know we would all choose, you know, to have blissful union with everything when we meditate. But sometimes it's really frustrating. Your mind is extra wild and it just feels like all you're doing is trying to stay focused for half a second. Yeah. And it may feel and seem like a waste of time that nothing's happening, but there's actually a lot going on. Even in those kinds of meditations, there's value. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to not judge your meditation by the experience that you're having, because you just don't know what's going on, you know, inside those deeper parts of your being, inside your nervous system. There's value in sticking with your practice, even when it's really frustrating. Mm-hmm. So we tend to set our own expectations like that, you know, when we have a really great experience, you know, but they can't all be peak experiences. It just doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. And for new meditators, oh my gosh, especially in Sedona where I am, people come to Sedona with all kinds of expectations about seeing the vortex or, you know, seeing UFOs or just all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, hey, I, you know, maybe those things will happen. I'm not going to say they can't, but there's no guarantee. You can't create them on demand.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's tricky, but you want to try to approach each meditation experience like a clean slate. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned, sorry, it wasn't you. I'm sorry.
It was the words of others.
Yeah, it was my conversation this morning about brushing your teeth and how, you know, one of my teachers actually said meditation is like brushing your teeth. And the idea there is you don't think while you're brushing your teeth that it's supposed to be any particular thing. You have no expectations really about brushing your teeth. You just do it because you know it's good for you. Mm-hmm. And you cannot imagine going through your day without it, right? And so you don't tell people like, I had the best toothbrushing this morning. It was so awesome. You know, but we tend to kind of think of meditation that way. So, you know, if you can kind of put it in the category of it's hygiene, you know, it's something that you're doing for your well-being, and it's not meant to be some really amazing psychedelic mega experience every time. I think that'll help to manage some of the expectations.
I love that. It's such a great analogy because then on top of that, it fits right into that subtle change difference where brushing your teeth doesn't necessarily, well, for some people, I know that's like the thing that starts their day and they're not going to have a good day without it, but meditation being the same way. It's that it's subtle, the difference it makes. But if you forget to brush your teeth or you're unable to brush your teeth for a couple of days, you know really well that scuzzy, awful, disgusting feeling that happens in your mouth. And what if we equate that to the lack of meditation and the chaotic, anxious brain that can't stay in the moment? You know, the meditation is essentially brushing away mental scuzz. And it just needs to be that mental hygiene.
Very true. I mean, it's like you said, sometimes it's so subtle, you think there's nothing to it until you stop it for a while. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it starts like, why am I so edgy? Why am I so quick to snap at people? Oh, I haven't meditated for a little while. Maybe that has something to do with it.
My mental output is like dog breath. Maybe I should. No offense to the dog breaths out there. Well, one of my mentors always said too that, you know, the only bad meditation is the one you don't do. And so anytime you sit down for any length of time, for any doing the hard work of focus and challenge, and hard not being a negative word, you know, not good nor bad, just the work, then that is a meditation worth doing, regardless of if you achieve nirvana or, you know, fought with your fidgets the whole time. Either way, you did the work.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And each time you do that, you know, you're taking incremental steps into a more peaceful, easier existence for yourself.
Love it. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for joining us and sharing this fabulous information on meditation. Where can our listeners find you and learn more about what you offer and more about what you teach?
Sure. Yeah. You can find me at SedonaMeditationExperiences.com. That's my website. And I offer a host of experiences ranging from 90-minute experiences where I take people out on the rocks to talk about meditation, talk about a different theme like chakras or loving kindness or the vortex energy in Sedona, and then guide you through a practice. I have retreats where it's more personalized. You know, we dive into where you are and maybe challenges that you've been having either with meditation or maybe you want to use meditation to find clarity about what's next in your life or to celebrate a particular event. People come here for weddings. There's a lot of mother-daughter events, you know, launching from graduation, switching from retirement, just those big life changes. So I do a lot of that. And yeah, you can find me on my website, my Instagram page, my Facebook page. All those links are on my website. And I also do weekly videos where I go out to gorgeous places around Sedona and talk about meditation and do a little mindfulness practice.
Beautiful. And yeah, we'll have all of those links available in our show notes as well. And then it occurs to me that there's one type of meditation we didn't talk about, and it's a gift that you are also offering to our listeners, and that is about guided meditation. So can you give us a little bit of an idea of what that is and then what you're offering to our listeners today?
Sure. Yeah. So guided meditations are, you know, when somebody's guiding you through, and for mine, that would be me. That's me guiding you through. And the gift that I have for your listeners is it's a guided practice called self-inquiry, where you will be able to ask yourself some key questions. And when you get into a nice, relaxed state of meditation and introduce particular types of questions, these are not questions that are meant to create a pros and cons list in your mind. You know, we're not trying to get the mind active. Mm-hmm. But we're kind of like dropping a stone into the pond and then feeling what the ripples have to share. So kind of listening for that intuition or just that inner knowingness to provide some sort of answer. So the gift that I have is that it's a self-inquiry practice that will kind of help you assess maybe what's changed in your life, if maybe your hopes and dreams need to be adjusted a little bit, especially as we come out of this significant pandemic that we've been in that's caused a lot of disruption and change to maybe the path that we were on a year or so ago.
Beautiful. Yeah. I mean, and what a year, you know, in the midst of all of 2020, you know, the word that was the word of the year for me was pivot. And, you know, that my office closed down, my office opens up, my daughter's school's open, it's not open, pivot, pivot, pivot. And I think some of us have a feeling that now that, well, it's not done, but now that it's kind of done, we're done pivoting. And that's just not the way of life. And as we come into a new style of turmoil, settling into the direction, the waypoints we want to find for ourselves, this is a beautiful opportunity and gesture. And thank you so much for sharing that with our listeners today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Yeah. And it's so important. Meditation will help with that pivoting in life, keeping you able to roll with the changes, which I think we're still in for a little bit of a ride on that front.
Yeah, we're not out yet. Keep getting ready to hit the waves. Well, so the link to the thank you meditation, the thank you gift is in the show notes as well. So if you are interested in that, please check it out. Then let us know what you think. You can find Healing Ground Movement as well on Facebook and Instagram. You can leave us comments, feedbacks, and review. We'd love to hear what you experience. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, our listeners, for joining in the movement as we explore new grounds for healing. I am just full of puns on the podcast name these days. And we will catch you next time for another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. Be well.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help.